Mr. Holman.
Good morning. Brian Holman on behalf of the plaintiff, Dr. Rappold. In accordance with the district court's ruling, Dr. Rappold was required to take the stand, testify under oath, and admit that there was a valid and non-discriminatory reason for his termination in order to receive the motivating factor instruction. This cannot be the law. No court should ever be able to dictate and require that any party, plaintiff or defendant, admit or concede any fact. And in fact, the district court has failed to cite any authority to support that requirement. The district court, in denying the plaintiff's post-trial motions, failed to address that point completely. The defendants rely on three district court cases to support the theory, none of which are from the district, Northern District of Illinois, or from Illinois and L. The Northern District of Texas, the Winter case, which the defendants rely on, the issue in that case was whether or not the Supreme Court's ruling in the Desert Palace overruled the McDonnell-Douglas framework in a summary judgment setting.
You know, you maintain, or I think you maintain, that you're under no obligation to concede that Baxter may have had a legitimate as well as illegitimate reason for terminating the author. And without such a concession, would you explain to me how the case is one of mixed or dual motives?
It's the evidence that establishes whether or not it was a mixed motive. There was evidence listed at trial of both a discriminatory and non-discriminatory reasons for his termination. That, by definition, according to the Hossett case, Seventh Circuit said, a mixed motive case is when there is evidence of discriminatory and non-discriminatory reasons. There is no requirement that the plaintiff concedes that the plaintiff did anything wrong. In this situation, they argued the non-discriminatory reason for his termination was his behavior. The plaintiff is not required to concede that he engaged in any type of improper behavior.
But I must say, it seemed to me that in your brief, what you've been doing is re-arguing all of the evidence in a manner that's most favorable to you. And amid critical testimony that was evidenced by the portion of Hunt's testimony that Baxter excerpted in full in its brief. And
Mayor, the district court acknowledged that there were both discriminatory and non-discriminatory reasons given for the plaintiff's termination. The non-discriminatory reason was it was told to him, the plaintiff testified, Andrea Hunt testified, and Christine Perro, the human resource director, testified that he was terminated in part, for insurmountable cultural differences. Now, they want to argue that they meant Baxter's culture, but the operative word is differences. They're comparing cultures, Baxter, to whoever that may be, to Dr. Rappold's culture, and saying there's an insurmountable differences between the two, it's not going to work, or terminating you as a result of that.
Well, if Hunt, in fact, harbored all of this animosity toward Germans or Europeans, why did she hire him in the first place? And why did she replace him with a German citizen?
She didn't replace him. Adam Scott, they claim they made an offer to a German. He was not replaced by a German. However, from the very beginning, and the district court acknowledges, from the very beginning, for whatever reason, Andrea Hunt took this alleged misconduct or behavior and attributed it to his culture. She called it Germanic. She called it he had a Germanic mold that she was afraid that she couldn't break. She called it aristocratic. She described it as mafia-like.
But they hired him from Germany. Initially, Judge Roeder's question was, why would she hire him if she had this animus to begin with?
Because it wasn't until this alleged misbehavior that she put the two together. She described his behavior as being Germanic. That's where her animus comes, her discriminatory animus comes. She attributes...
She's reporting to Ehrlich, who's a German citizen for an awfully long time here.
She never had...
Did she ever exhibit anti-European feelings toward him?
There was no evidence of that, but she never had the opportunity to either discipline him, hire, or terminate him. It's the fact that she attributes the misconduct to him being German. That's where it develops from. And it's not until he starts working that she observes this, or she feels she observes this. As soon as there's any evidence of both discriminatory and non-discriminatory basis given, a but-for instruction is improper. Because a but-for instruction says there could be only one reason for the termination. And if the jury finds that there were any other reasons, whether discriminatory or non-discriminatory, they cannot give a plaintiff's verdict.
Why isn't that the right ultimate question for the jury to decide? I notice that neither side's brief here discusses Green against Doroff, in which we hashed this out, I thought, definitively, and said that if the plaintiff fails on a but-for theory, it fails. Case fails, mixed motive or not.
If the jury hears evidence of both discriminatory and non-discriminatory, if there's a but-for instruction given, the plaintiff is placed under the unnecessary and unauthorized burden of disproving.
I understand you're saying that. My question is, how's that compatible with Green against Doroff?
I'm not familiar with Green.
That's this circuit's definitive treatment of this issue. We had panel opinions that were going both ways. Green against Doroff is a Rule 40E circulation. It has the authority of an en banc decision. One would think that's what the parties would concentrate on.
If Green versus Doroff definitively says that a motivating factor should be given in a mixed motive case, then that is the law of the circuit. And there has been evidence, and the district court acknowledges that there was evidence of both discriminatory and non-discriminatory reasons. He denied the motivating factor instruction because the plaintiff refused to concede or admit to the non-discriminatory reason.
Didn't he assess the evidence as you either believed, the jury had to either believe your client's view or the opposing view?
He called it an either or. But unfortunately, under 42 U.S.C. 2000E2M, it's not an either or statute. There can be more than one factor or reason for termination, and the plaintiff can still prevail.
Wasn't he reading your client's litigation approach, that you tried it as an either or?
The pretrial motion, he denied a mixed motive analysis.
And didn't he say? Well, we'll see how the evidence goes. I deny it, but we'll see how the evidence goes. And if at the close of the case, it's a mixed motive case, I'll give it a chance.
Absolutely. And the plaintiff changed his strategy at trial and elicited the non-discriminatory behavior arguments. Andrea Hunt, Christine Perro testified in the plaintiff's case in chief only. Those are the three individuals who testified to the non-discriminatory and discriminatory behavior. The plaintiff elicited that. But once the jury hears testimony from whether it's defendant, plaintiff, that there's more than one reason for the termination, and they're given an instruction that only one reason can be allowed, they can't rule in favor of the plaintiff. And we know that they were confused because there was a note back to the judge. And the operative part of that note was based on some part of national origin. The jury picked up there was a part of the decision to terminate was national origin. But because they were given a but-for instruction, and because the plaintiff was placed under the improper burden of trying to disprove the non-discriminatory reason, they could not render a plaintiff's verdict.
Yeah, I'm just totally lost, since Green against Doroff holds that a but-for instruction is the right instruction. What the mixed motive business does is help somebody get to a jury. It doesn't change the question the jury has to decide. Now, perhaps you, just being unaware of Green against Doroff, don't agree with it, but it is the law of this circuit.
But there can be more than one reason for determination. Pursuant to the statute, pursuant to Desert Palace, it's unambiguous language of the statute. It says that there could be more than one factor.
Unambiguous language of the statute is the last phrase I would expect to hear in connection with mixed motive cases.
But there shouldn't be a confusion between mixed motive.
The committee that did our pattern jury instructions said that this was a complete jumble. We tried to unjumble it in Green. And to have you come and argue this case and then say, well, I have no clue what this circuit has done to try to unjumble it, is very dispiriting.
So the committee also suggested that the motivating factor jury instruction should be given in a mixed motive case. So the question is whether or not was this a mixed motive case. If it was a mixed motive case, then the motivating factor instruction should be given. And there is no definitive opinion from this court that says in a mixed motive case.
Green against Doroff is a mixed motive opinion. You've already said you've never read it. How can you tell me now you're confident it doesn't exist?
I apologize, Your Honor. I'm not saying that. If there's any further questions, otherwise I'll reserve my time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Holman. Mr. Ruskowski.
Good morning. May it please the Court, John Ruskowski on behalf of Baxter International. Your Honors, the jury verdict in favor of Baxter should be affirmed. Baxter presented substantial and compelling evidence throughout the trial, evidence that Judge Hibbler, who presided over the trial, referred to as a mountain of testimony, that it withdrew the offer from Dr. Rapold for one reason and one reason only, his repeated acts of insubordination and abusive behavior of others. Judge Hibbler also was correct and should be affirmed for employing our circuit's pattern jury instruction. That pattern jury instruction, in compliance with the law and the decisions of that jury instruction committee, says it should be applied in, quote, most cases. There was absolutely no reason to deviate from this pattern instruction in this typical either-or case. Neither party, based on the evidence provided, put on a mixed motive case. Plaintiff was... My apologies, I don't know if that's something I caused or not.
I assume this is not a response to the substance of your argument as opposed to some other electronic glitch.
I do not know, Your Honor. Returning to my argument, neither party put on a mixed motive case. Throughout and at every stage, plaintiff argued that there was only one reason he was terminated, an illegitimate motive of his national origin. He denied all of Baxter's reasons. He described them as false. His attorney described them as pretexts in his opening and his closing arguments. Plaintiff never sought or never did demonstrate that Baxter had a legitimate reason for withdrawing his offer. And that was true from the outset in his pleadings, in the summary judgment responses, at trial, in his post-trial motions, and even as was pointed out in his arguments before the court, where he continues to try and re-argue the evidence that this jury had the opportunity to review. Baxter also was consistent and stated throughout and presented compelling evidence in that support of that position that the only reason it withdrew Dr. Rapold's offer was due to his repeated acts of unprofessional behavior, the mountain of testimony that was referred to by Judge Hibbler. In the words of Judge Posner in the Seventh Circuit opinion, the Boyd opinion,
counsel,
Baxter went for broke.
It doesn't matter who writes the opinions of this court.
I understand, Your Honor. I was referring to the fact it was a concurring.
Then why did you bring it up?
Because it was a concurring opinion, Your Honor. I wanted to make sure that was clarified, although we certainly set that out in our brief. In the words of the concurring opinion and the Boyd opinion, Baxter went for broke, and the pattern instruction was the proper one to provide. That's something, frankly, we also believe that the Lewis case in the Seventh Circuit in 2009 recognized when it noted that the Seventh Circuit had not reached a final determination on certain things, but noted the concurring opinion and that it would be inappropriate to provide the mixed motive instruction in a case where a party did go for broke. And that position, that's entirely consistent with the statute, that's entirely consistent with the case law. Appellant has taken the position that Desert Palace somehow required mixed motives instructions to be given whenever a defendant decides to put on a defense. That's not the law. It's incompatible with the law, the statute, and with common sense. That would leave us with a situation whenever a defendant decided to put on a defense, they were automatically set with some liability based on the statute. And that simply cannot be correct. Similarly, just moving on, plaintiff, even if they were able to convince this panel that there was some sort of error in Judge Hibbler of using the pattern instruction, that he still would need to show prejudice, as we pointed out in our brief. There simply can be no argument there was any prejudice here. The jury was presented with a very easy choice, one that juries are presented with every day in our courts. They could have believed Dr. Rapold's story, or they could have believed Baxter's story. Based on the mountain of testimony, the jury believed Baxter's story, and that was entirely rational, and that jury verdict should be affirmed. I'm going to backtrack a little bit just to go through some of the various things.
Is there any real neat reason? Haven't you made your point?
I think I have. If the court has any questions about any other positions, I'm happy to answer them, but we certainly have made our point, and we've laid out our arguments in our briefs. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Holman, anything further?
Yes, and counsel just hit on it, Your Honor. It's not an either-or. The jury was given a but-for instruction, which means there is only one reason for the termination of Dr. Rapold. If they heard evidence of two reasons, then the plaintiff is put under the burden of establishing that the non-discriminatory reason was not true. That's a burden that's not stated anywhere in the law. The statute states that there can be more than one reason, and it can clearly be a plaintiff's verdict. In this case, there was evidence of more than one reason, both discriminatory and non-discriminatory. But with a but-for instruction, you can't do that. And at the very least, the court cannot affirm the district court's opinion that a plaintiff must admit or concede to anything in order to get any type of jury instruction. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.